Albert Breer, we have tracked him down from the MMQB.com and NBC Sports Network. He's on the train, the midnight train to Georgia. What's up, Albert Breer?
How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We appreciate you giving us a little bit of time. Things have started to calm down a little bit. Interesting to see whether Seattle can sneak in the back door or if Atlanta holds on. I guess that's where a lot of the focus is coming into the final weekend, huh?
Yeah, there's not a lot of drama. You know, normally we'll have, you know, a division on the line here or there and that sort of thing. And, you know, now it feels like a lot of the drama has been taken out of it. Obviously, there's some question of the seeding and all the rest of it. But, you know, we know who three of the four bye teams are now, Philly, New England, and Pittsburgh. And we've got a good idea of who about 10 of the playoff teams are going to be. And you've just really got that final spot. Well, I guess 9 of the 12. You've got that final spot in the AFC, and then you've got the two final spots in the AFC and the final spot in the NFC to be decided. So, look, guys, there's a reason why they decided to opt out of having a Sunday night game this week. And I'd imagine that the feeling was that the ratings wouldn't be fantastic for that one. And, you know, they're sensitive to that, and clearly it's a reflection on the lack of drama that we have going into week 17.
You know, Albert, we were talking about this before, that Jacksonville is the 3 seed, but, you know, just when you start to believe that maybe Blake Bortles has turned a corner and this is a team to be reckoned with, they meet up with Jimmy G, and all of a sudden all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about that, guys, it sort of explains to everyone what they've done with Blake Bortles and how they've made it. They made the environment around Blake Bortles better. I pointed this out a couple times over the last week. The Jaguars' biggest injury this year was actually the Blake Bortles' number one receiver, Allen Robinson. And I think it goes to show you that helping a young quarterback isn't always about just giving them guys to throw to. It's also about taking the pressure off them. And that's what the Jaguars have been able to do over the course of the year. You know, it's through that running game and through the defense, it's been top five, really end-to-end. They've been able to keep Blake Bortles in manageable down and distance situations, keep him from having to play from behind much, and that's allowed him to reach a comfort level in the way he can play. And you know, now all of a sudden you turn around and he's once again playing from behind because Jimmy Garoppolo was Tammy or unstoppable at this point, and you see him revert to being the old Blake Bortles. And so that's what I'd be concerned about if I was Jacksonville. I'm not concerned if the defense and running game coming. What I'm concerned is what happens if, you know, they go to New England the second weekend in January and all of a sudden, you know, they're down 14-0 pretty quick. That's where I think the issue is with Blake Bortles. It's not that he can't play well in a controlled environment. Mm-hmm. He's shown that he can do that over the last few weeks. It's what happens when the running game isn't working, what happens if the defense isn't playing well, what happens if he's playing from behind.
Gotcha. Albert Breer joining us, talking football on the Fan on this Tuesday afternoon. It's widely considered that Pittsburgh and New England are going to play in the AFC Championship game, and a lot of that is perception and labels that we put on teams. But is there any reason that you think that won't happen?
I actually think Kansas City's a threat.
Okay,
and we've all talked about Jacksonville for a while, but I would have told you a month ago that the Chiefs are out of it. I would have told you the Chargers were going to win the division. And it's credit to Andy Reid and his staff. They've turned it around. And really, it's about the running game. You know, I know a lot of people made their struggles through that 7-week stretch about Alex Smith. It was never Alex Smith. The coaches never thought it was Alex Smith. They felt like he was still fine. Just that they'd run the ball so well early in the year. They were averaging about 160 yards a game over their first 5 games. And then that got cut in half over their next 7 games. And so they've been able to regain their stride running the ball behind Kareem Hunt, the offensive line. And that's, of course, made Alex Smith better. And look, I mean, they went into Foxborough and won their first week of the year in a very, very convincing way. And so I think with the likelihood that the Patriots are going to beat the Jets this weekend and have home field through the AFC playoffs, what you really need to start looking at is who's going to go into Foxborough and not be intimidated and who's going to be capable of winning there. And I don't think Jacksonville will be. I think Pittsburgh still has something of a mental block in going up there and having to operate in that environment up there. And so, I look at the teams in the AFC side of the bracket, and I look at teams that have won there that I feel like wouldn't walk in there and be defeated. And Kansas City, I think, will be one, and Baltimore will be another, that I think could go in there and operate at their highest level. Whether or not that's enough, we'd have to see.
Albert Breer of the Monday Morning Quarterback.com and NBC Sports Network in Boston, our guest here, Ed Coleman, Chris Moore with you on the afternoon drive here on The Fan. You know, I know he's not the player he used to be, and we were talking about the Steelers in New England, but is that true? James Harrison really showed up with the Pats?
Well, I think he was invited. I don't think he just showed up. You know, it makes sense for them, though. And not just because it, you know, keeps the Steelers from having him on their shadow roster, you know, which is part of it, is that, you know, at least then you close out the possibility that he goes back to Pittsburgh. I think there's a real need there, too. They've struggled to create pass rush. He can do that. He's not a fit for their base defense, but like, he's a guy who can come in on third down and play. I think that is something you can look at. Here's the other thing, guys. I mean, if you've looked at the guys who they've been starting in their front seven, there's one player in Marquise Flowers who was a special teamer from the Bengals. They traded for in August. Another guy, Eric Lee, was plucked off the Buffalo practice squad. Mm. These guys are starting and playing starter snaps on the defensive side of the ball. And so, you know, they need help anywhere they can get it from a talent perspective in the front seven. And I think Matt Patricia, their coordinator, has done a good job of managing the issue. But they just don't have the horses up front. And they've been able to scotch tape it together. And I think any sort of help they can get as far as manpower goes is welcome. And that's a huge reason why James Harrison is up there. There is a need for guys who are, you know, threats in the defensive front seven. And Harrison may not be able to play more than 5 or 10 snaps a game for you anymore, but if he can bring you a little something, it might be worth bringing him in.
Mm. There's a sense in the NFC that we're going to have great drama, that there isn't a real favorite, and that there are quality teams that put up points but aren't consistent week to week. Any reason you dispute that? Will we have a dramatic NFC, an unpredictable NFC?
I mean, I think what you have is well-rounded teams that are accomplished quarterbacks. You know, I think at the beginning of the year, if any of us had guessed that Nick Foles and Case Keenum and Jared Goff would be quarterbacking the top three seeded teams in the NFC, we'd have been called crazy. But that's where we're at, you know. And so I think the Eagles and Vikings and Rams have good, well-rounded teams that when, you know, when they got to turn to their quarterback, are they going to be able to do it? I think Goff's got tremendous upside, but we haven't seen him in a playoff environment yet. And that's why it's hard for me not to look at New Orleans and be intrigued. They might have another year here. And the reason why is because I don't think that Drew Brees in his 12 years in New Orleans has ever had this type of combination of run game and defense around him. And for once, he doesn't have to throw for 350 yards every game to win. And to me, that makes the Saints incredibly dangerous going into the playoffs. Now, they don't have, you know, the array of passing game weapons that they have in the past, but their run game is really, really strong. Their defense is really strong. And, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, well, your trump card is Drew Brees now. If everything's even everywhere else, the Vikings or the Rams or the Eagles, and then it's Drew Brees versus Nick Foles or Drew Brees versus Jared Goff or Drew Brees versus Case Keenum, who do you take? Yeah, I still think it's Brees. Mm. And so I think the Saints are capable of playing at an even higher level than they played to this point, just based on not Brees himself, but what's around Brees and how it's a little bit different than what's been around him in the past.
Albert, in your estimation, can the defenses of, say, Philly and Minnesota make up for any shortcomings or inexperience that, you know, you might run into with Foles or Keenum?
Thank God Foles didn't look good last night.
No.
I mean, I think you're starting to see how reliant they've been on Carson Wentz. And that's not taking anything away from the Alshon Jeffries. Nelson Aguilar's gotten a lot better, and obviously they've got some running backs there. I just think that the drop-off from Carson Wentz to Nick Foles is pretty severe. I think Keenum's at least played at a really high level on a pretty consistent basis this year.
Yeah, he has. Yeah.
And they've got guys who've been there for a few years who know the ropes in the system and, you know, in the passing game, and Kyle Rudolph and Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen. And the defense is dominant, you know. So I know it sounds weird. I think the Eagles are look, I think the Eagles have a chance to be one of the best teams in the league for the next 5 to 10 years based on the foundation they've built. But I sort of feel like this is the front end of that and that maybe they were still a year away in a lot of different places. And I think losing Carson Wentz sort of exposes that to some level.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get Wentz back, I think they'll be right back there. And if they had Wentz now, I would say they'd be a strong favorite to go to the Super Bowl. But if you're asking me where I think they are versus the Vikings right now, I'd say the Vikings are probably a little bit of a better bet if you got two of them on the same field at the same time at this time.
Speculate for us on the future of Eli Manning.
Well, I mean, it's only going to be pulling the trigger on the decision-making there. It's hard to say. If it's Dave Gettleman, as many have suspected, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a combination of Dave Gettleman and somebody else maybe. You know, somebody like an Elliott Wolf coming in as a GM and waiting. I think Gettleman would look seriously at the idea of bringing back Eli, and he's affordable as far as what starting quarterbacks go for right now, and then drafting his replacement. And so long as you could make sure Eli's okay with that, I think that would be an ideal way to handle it. And we've seen teams throw that sort of capital at quarterbacks. I mean, look, the Bears last year, they signed a veteran in Mike Glennon at $15 million per. They draft Mitch Trubisky second overall after trading up. 2 years ago, the Eagles bring back Sam Bradford at $18 million per. They trade up twice and get Carson Wentz. You know, to me, it's such an ideal situation if you can have a veteran and have a rookie and have them work together. And especially if that veteran's won 2 Super Bowl championships and you're investing heavily in the rookie, you'd love to have the rookie learn from that veteran and see the way that veteran works, practices, competes, all of that stuff. And so I think the ideal, if I'm a Giants fan, and I think that the executives who've been through there, whoever they pick as GM, will consider this, is to try and convince Eli Manning to come back and be the starter in 2018, but do it with his replacement sitting there right behind him.
Yeah, I guess we don't know who's going to be.
And we don't know, guys, the one thing we got to, yeah. The one thing that's there too, of course, politically, will Eli sign off on that? That's something I think we have to consider too. But to me, that's an ideal scenario. And because of the way that rookie contracts work now, it's something that's very, very feasible too from a logistical standpoint.
Gotcha. And I guess we don't know who's available totally at this point in time or who would be available. But you got a pecking order for quarterbacks?
Yeah, I I'm not a scout, but I talked to a lot of these guys over the course of the last few months and do my draft column every week, and I would just tell you that I think that Rosen and Darnold have separated themselves, and they're the top two guys. And then I think after that, it's going to be Mayfield and Allen in some order. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the Giants, if they stick there with the at number two, and I don't know if they have that locked up yet. I'm not sure if
it's
they're
two,
locked
it's
in.
Two or three, I think. One of the
yeah, they're okay. No worse than three.
Yeah. So, if they're sitting there at two, they're going to get, and both those guys come out, and right now I would guess they both come out, then you're going to get one or the other, you know. And so, to me, I look at that and I'd say that's a good position to be in. And we'll see if Darnold separates himself from Rosen or Rosen separates himself from Darnold. The issues with Darnold are more about mechanics and the way he throws the ball. The issues with Rosen are more about maturity and how seriously he takes football. But I think both of them are seen as guys who are worthy of being the number one overall pick. And if there are two guys worthy of that, you know, the number two pick, you're in a pretty good spot.
Albert, safe travels. We appreciate the insight. Thanks for joining us on The Fan this afternoon.
All right, thanks, guys.
There you go. Albert Breer, MMQB.com, NBC Sports Network, Boston.